Hello and welcome to Publish Me, a monthly podcast series of the AS21 Podcast Network, where we explore the publishing process of the fantasy epic, The Will of the Magi. I'm your host, Keith F. Shovlin, publisher of AS21 Media, and joining me as always is...
Hello everyone, this is Paul Dickinson-Russell, the author of The Will of the Magi. April Fools! I'm not actually Paul Russell, I'm a barrel of monkeys! Ha! Only a few days late, sorry.
I was going to say, you missed it.
I tried.
Missed it by that much.
Hi, I'm Rana Gaynor, design consultant for AOS21 Media and book cover artist for The Will of the Magi. Yay, April. Better yes. Weather.
Yes, much, much better weather. Absolutely.
My sinuses thank you all.
Yes. See, now I'm thinking barrel of monkeys. Is that, you know, call back to the old adage of innumerable monkeys with innumerable typewriters typing the works of Shakespeare?
Absolutely. I have all of them.
And that is apropos because Shakespeare was born in April as well.
Happy birthday to the greatest man ever. And if you are not someone who likes Shakespeare, you really need to study the sexual innuendos that he wrote about. Especially with Much Ado About Nothing.
Oh, definitely.
You really need to study that. Because if you don't, you're silly. Sorry.
All right, and Paul has already pissed off half our audience, so that means this must be a regular edition of the podcast. This is April 2019, Chapter 49 of the Publish Me Podcast. In this edition, it will be self-publishing success stories, where we'll be featuring author Neil Gordon, author of Tony Accardo is Joe Batters. And he'll be on in just a minute, but first, a quick update. Remember, you can catch this podcast every month, hosted by Podomatic, available on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and our home on the web, audio.as21.com. You can reach out to us on Facebook, facebook.com/publishpodcast, on Twitter at publishpodcast, or email us, publishpodcast@as21.com. So it is April, it is spring, the cold weather is gone, and... Well, for the most part.
I had snow by me the other day. It's not gone yet.
Okay.
I'm breaking out the flamethrower soon.
All right. So, quick update, Paul. Where are we now on the editing process of The Will of the Magi?
We are over 75% of the way done.
Woo! Yay!
Huzzah!
Yes. The end is in sight.
It's a sniper's scope away, but it's still in sight.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Which means we are on target for a summer release of The Will of the Magi.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Full promotional release, paperback, copies, ebook, a limited run, hardcover edition to thank the wonderful Indiegogo supporters who helped make this all possible. It's about a year behind where we expected it to be, but it's finally happening, so woo!
At least we didn't run into the horror story about that one guy on Kickstarter when Kickstarter was first in its infancy.
The guy that torched all his books in the alley?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. $500,000 of insurance claim he tried to file wrongly.
Yeah, the guy kickstarted his book, he printed the copies, and then he torched them all rather than send them out to his supporters.
Well, he torched them all because they were gilded leather-bound editions, and he didn't estimate how much they were going to weigh. And so all money he had, including he was gonna have to pay like $500,000 in shipping fees to ship out all the copies of this book. That's why he torched them in the back alley, because rather than, you know, tell everyone, hey, I need everyone to fork up another $50 a person for shipping fees.
Yeah. Well, considering I know they've made a change in policy, both Kickstarter and Indiegogo, where they now will be able to figure out your shipping fees based on the things you're ordering, because you're expected, when you set your prizes at the different reward levels, you are expected to give an estimate of the weight of the object. So in the case of your book, Paul, I think we would have estimated it at about 1,000 pounds, right?
About 1,000 pounds, give or take.
Yes.
You know,
like
that.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, again, you know, it's big enough to kill medium-sized dogs and small children if you drop it incorrectly. Okay. And that's the paperback. The hardcover, well, I'm sure the U.S. military will have tactical book drops at some point.
Okay. More effective than the atom bomb. And easier to read.
How many more people can we piss off tonight? Oh. Give me a minute. Yes.
So, Rana, how are you doing?
Doing pretty well. Designed myself a new website, so that's been interesting.
Is that still at ronagainer.com?
So I have that for my illustration, and then I designed a separate website for graphic design work because people kept telling me to do that.
Okay.
And, well, it's kind of cool because it's more practice, and like now I can be all fancy, like, oh, I have multiple websites to showcase all of my work. Whoa.
Okay. And what would be the address of your graphic design website then?
Opalfire.design.
Opalfire.design. OPALFIRE dot design. Nice.
Yep.
Okay.
I felt like it sounded better than Fire Opal. Like it rolls off the tongue a little bit better.
I would say so. Opalfire definitely rolls much better than Fire Opal. Because you say Fire Opal, and I'm like, well, what did Opal do? She's been a steadfast employee of the company for 35 years. Why do you want to fire her? She has kids, damn it.
And that's when you go all corporate.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's not our concern. She shouldn't have had those kids if she wanted a job where she could be fired from it.
Well, at least she's still getting her pension.
Well, that's what she used to think. If we declare bankruptcy.
No, okay. Enough of that. All right.
This episode is sponsored by...
Remember that this podcast is brought to you by Audible. Sign up today at audibletrial.com/AS21 and you get your first month on the Audible system for free. That means you get your first audiobook for free and you can choose from 180,000 titles. You can listen to that audiobook on your phone, on your iPad, on your other tablet, on your Android phone, on your computer. Anywhere you can upload audiobooks, you can bring Audible with you. And not only do you get access to those 180,000 titles, but you get access to all the other wonderful things in Audible system, like Audible Originals, which is premium podcasts, something at a higher level than what you're listening to with us. What have I been listening to in the past month? As of today, I finished My Antonia by Willa Cather. Previous to that, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks by Rebecca Skloot, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, A Life by Jane Sharon DeHart. Next up, I am starting Facts and Fears by James R. Clapper, former Director of National Intelligence, followed by the fourth book of the Dark Tower series from Stephen King, Wizard in Glass. That one, as an audio file, is 28 hours long, so that might take me the rest of April. Yes.
Nice. Hey.
So many wonderful things available on Audible, many wonderful books to choose from. And once you download your audiobook from Audible, it is yours forever. So check it out today, audibletrial.com/AS21, and get your first month for free.
And publish that novel working on for years, but need an extra set of eyes to look at it. What about that blog post you've been working on, or that article you want to put out to help people? You want to make sure that the spelling, grammar, content, and flow are correct, right? Then look no further. Quoth the Writer LLC is here to help. Quoth the Writer is an editing and proofreading service geared towards any and all writing needs. Owner Lisa Arpino Hadrovich has a BA in creative writing, worked for and interned for a literary journal called The Literary Review, and has been working as a freelance editor and proofreader for the last 3 years. She has worked with students from 7th grade to graduates in college. She has also worked with a small business to help them edit articles and the business overview and their policies. Whether it's a novel, school report, article, or blog post, Lisa will be there for all your writing needs. To learn more or start working with her, please contact her via email at lhodorovych17@gmail.com. That's lhodorovych17@gmail.com. Or you can call her at 201-787-6499. Thank you.
All right, so this is Chapter 49 of the Publish Me Podcast with Self-Publishing Success Stories. We welcome to this month author Neil Gordon. Neil Gordon is the author of the sensationally terrifying book Joe Batters, the definitive work on Tony Accardo and the Chicago Outfit, a creation of nonfiction. This is the last untold story of the 20th century. Gordon's story began as a kid while growing up in Phoenix. His father, Dean, a novelist of Caribbean intrigue, surrounded his son with tales of mystery, suspense, and adventure. In 1972, when The Godfather premiered at the Cine Capri Theater, it was an eye-opener, and Gordon was hooked into the history and lore of the mafia. A graduate of DU's Hotel Restaurant School, Gordon's career included owner-operator of a Scottsdale Steakhouse and Blues Club, and 10-year stints as senior buyer with City Meats Phoenix and vice president of meat operations at Bronner Foods in Sioux City, Iowa. While vacationing in Nova Scotia, where his father grew up, a stop at what was once his great-great-uncle's house changed Gordon's life. The man renovating the house happened to be Chicago's mob boss, Tony Accardo's illegitimate son, Stephen. Stephen's mother, who survived a mob hit and attempted kidnapping, was one of many affairs Tony Accardo took to his grave. The story of Joe Batters started to manifest. After nearly 10 years of research, writing, and editing, Neil Gordon is excited to share Joe Batters with mafia fans around the globe. Welcome to the Publish Me Podcast, Neil Gordon.
Well, thank you.
Woohoo, woohoo, woohoo.
Yes. Oh, how long has the book been out now?
We launched about November. So we've had about 3 or 4 months of sales.
Okay. Oh, fantastic.
We actually hit our 1,000th copy about 2 weeks ago, which is pretty good, I think.
Oh, fantastic.
Is that 1,000th copy overall, or is that in one particular medium or another?
Well, that's both Kindle, Amazon, Nook, and Barnes & Noble.
Nice.
So it's basically e-books or paperback.
Okay.
Fantastic. Now, when you contacted us about being on, you shared the links that you have actually had a lot of media outreach so far in promoting your book. I see After Hours with Rick Hogan, Impact Reader USA, Dr. Paul's Family Talk, and an article in the Chicago Tribune. So can you tell us how you were able to get such great coverage for your book release?
As far as marketing, the first thing is to find the perfect book. The perfect idea that's never been out there, and also a great cover, and then find a marketing strategy that works for you. In my case, it was emailing every possible podcast, newspaper, bookstore, et cetera, where we thought the book would sell. And basically, our launch was around February, which was the St. Valentine's Day Massacre was in February, on February 14th. And Tony Accardo was actually one of the shooters at the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. So we kind of had that date as a projected start date. So I had an interview with Crime Beat Radio on Valentine's Day live. And also the Rick Hogan interview is exceptional to get that exposure and get in the Chicago Tribune. So it's a combination of three different things. Rick Hogan, he read the book and his review was just off the charts. And to find people that really know about the mob, and especially in Chicago there, it was very fortunate that I ran into him. And, you know, these people have just been very, very helpful. So.
Oh, fantastic.
Nice.
And we do have the links to those three interviews and articles, so we are going to share them in the show notes with this episode. So about how many podcast interviews would you say you've done to this point?
I've done 4 or 5 right now.
Okay.
Just some different ones. There's a couple of writers, podcasts, et cetera. But basically these links, also been able to get in all the local newspapers, et cetera, and, you know, local author goes good, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
But the story is, it's the first story about Tony Accardo in 25 years. Have any of you heard of Tony Accardo?
No.
I've heard his name in passing in learning about that whole time period. I was in Chicago, I believe it was 4 years ago, and did a mobsters tour. And so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he came up on that.
was John Binder?
Yes.
Yeah, he does those tours. He's a friend of mine. So
nice.
But Tony Accardo is, of course, out of Chicago, but he operated in the shadows. He ran the Chicago mob for 60 years. He was Al Capone's chauffeur. Again, he was one of the shooters in St. Valentine's Day Massacre. But he was behind the scenes. So unless you lived in Chicago, you probably never heard of the name. When I first heard the name, I had never heard of him either. So it was one of those. The research on this book, it took me 10 years, about 30 hours a week.
Ooh,
and wow. So much in the background to find information was extremely hard to do. He just covered his track. He didn't believe it. There's hardly any pictures of him. And he just, you know, he was the old style mobster that wasn't on Time magazine. You know, figure the two most popular mobsters in the 20th century were John Gotti and their notoriety. They loved the press. And both went to jail and died, you know, very, very young because of that. And Tony Accardo was more like Don Corleone and the Godfather. Yeah, everything was behind the scenes. There's no press. Don't talk about anything. If a writer would write a story on him, they might be killed. We kind of estimated that he ran the mob for about 60 years. And if that's about 720 months, if he actually had someone killed once a month, you know, you're talking a tremendous number of people. We figure between 400 and 1,000 people. So it's a very, one of those scenes in Chicago that it's just a story that it's never been told. It was the book written on him by Bill Romer in 1996, and he was an FBI agent, but it was kind of slanted towards the FBI. And there's a lot of things that he didn't get right. And I wanted to really bring the truth about a lot of the fallacies with the mob and things that were said, and to really bring the truth behind it. And as a writer, when you're talking about a guy that maybe is behind 400 to 1,000 murders, and he's never spent a night in jail, that means every single murder is speculative. I mean, they just never got him on anything in all these years. He was picked up a number of times. So everything is kind of speculative. So you have to use, you know, the common sense approach of what the police thought or what other mobsters thought or et cetera. So very interesting book to write. A lot of behind the scenes stuff.
Interesting. So what type of different sources did you need to dive into for the research on this?
Well, Stephen was an illegitimate son. He lived in Nova Scotia and he was a bookworm. Yeah, I don't think he was ever on the internet. He was just old school. And he read every book out there. So, in fact, he figured it out by picking up a copy of Kitty Kelly's book, The Autobiography of Frank Sinatra. And he noticed that Frank Sinatra and his mom had been in the certain same towns that Tony Accardo had been in. And that was the first link to that. Of course, with Chicago basically controlled everything west of Chicago, and then New York controlled anything east of Chicago. So basically, the Chicago mob controlled Las Vegas, got into a complete history of Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack, the history of Hollywood and the mob, and a lot of really interesting stories there. Mario Puzo was extremely highly decorated writer, but he never made any money. He never sold books, and he was broke. He owed about $30,000 to friends and family, and he had like seven children. But in one of his books that he wrote about an aging mafia don, and his friend said, you know, you should pursue that. And he grew up in New York, but he didn't know anything about the mob. So he moved into the Sands Hotel in Las Vegas. And he stood at the roulette wheel for, you know, months on end, picking up stories of that was the Chicago mob, Sam Giancana and Tony Accardo. And that was the birth of the Rat Pack, too. So that's the seeds for The Godfather came from the Sands Hotel, which was probably the top mafia relations at that time. So it gets rather interesting, all those stories. All the stories, I mean, it gets into the murder of JFK and Marilyn Monroe, and et cetera. JFK basically went to Tony Accardo in the 1960 election, and Joe Kennedy, the patriarch of the family, he made his money running liquor, bootleg liquor in Chicago with Sam Giancana. So they went to Tony Accardo, Sam Giancana, to fix the 1960 elections, and they basically fixed it by, I think, Chicago and Texas both were the place that they did all of the fixing. And, Kennedy beat Richard Nixon by the smallest vote total ever. And anyways, that the agreement was that Joe Kennedy, they would back off on the mob, especially their Las Vegas operation. Well, the first thing John Kennedy did was make his brother Robert attorney general. And he hated the mob, and he went after them. I think they felt betrayed. So I'd pursue a line that the mob had as much to do with assassination of JFK. Jack Ruby had been a mobster in Chicago when he was a kid. He ran errands for Al Capone. And he was sent out to Dallas by Tony Accardo to be the point man for the payoff of the Dallas Police Department. The mob was getting into just a lot of background there. So,
right.
Murder of Marilyn Monroe, that whole Eric Bay of Pigs of Giancana working for the CIA to assassinate Fidel Castro. All of those stories are in there, which is pretty fascinating stuff. I think Tony Carter was pulling the strings behind it on everything. So
10 years of research. At what point did you realize that you had enough that you could start writing?
Well, the first one, my dad and I met Stephen, and we talked about it with Tony Accardo, and he told me about it. And I told him I'd like to try to write the book. That was the first time. And then once I went to the internet and looked up Tony Accardo, I mean, there's, a million hits. There's a million stories on Tony Accardo. And it was just, the more I kept working into it, at first I thought, it was not enough storyline. And by the time I was done, it was just like, what can I exclude? I met a man by the name of John Flood. He's a criminologist, and he was a Chicago cop in the 1960s. And he was one of the ones that was on, he worked with Bill Romer, and they arrested Accardo a number of times. And I met him in Las Vegas, and he just kind of blew me away with the Vegas connection and how the mob infiltrated all the hotels. They used the Teamsters pension fund, and of course Jimmy Hoffa was part of that also. So at that point, I got into also the Havana Conference, which I got into, which is another significant part of the book. So there's just so much information there that it was just a matter of organizing it and putting it in a timeline and, of course, writing it so we think that folks would, appreciate it. So,
oh, absolutely. What would you say was your biggest roadblock or biggest wall that you ran into during the research process?
Well, I think just finding the information. Eventually, I got to know some different Chicago cops and criminologists, et cetera, and got some personal relationship. John Binder actually called me to, there's a Big Tuna picture. He called me to find out the characters on the Big Tuna picture, that sort of thing. But getting the information and getting it right, there's a website out there, My Al Capone Museum, which is dedicated to Al Capone. And this guy is just nuts about getting everything right and taking all the myths and disputing them. And so that's what I wanted to do is, as a nonfiction book is to get all the stories. And, from reading the Godfather movie, there's so much of it I wanted to know about, like, was this true or was that true? So during the book, I go through all those different scenes and, things that are applicable, I put in. If they aren't applicable, I talk about it. And because that's something I'd want to know as a Godfather fan anyway. So.
Cool.
Have any, law enforcement agencies, contacted you or, taken an interest in what you're writing? Because, I know Al Capone still technically owes, millions of dollars in back taxes, and the IRS really wants it.
Well, I know all those. I mean, there was a famous case, Desi Arnaz and Lucy and Desi formed Desi Lou Productions. One of their spinoffs was The Untouchables. And The Untouchables was the first TV show that came out that America kind of fell in love with, you know, the Italian gangsters. Well, Desi Arnaz and Al Capone's son, Sonny, were actually friends. They went to high school together in Miami. And Tony Accardo and Sam Giancana weren't too happy about this show about the Untouchables. And it showed the Chicago mob like as, you know, spaghetti slurping, you know, pigs and all this stuff. It just wasn't very flattering if you're Italian. Mm-hmm. And so Sonny Capone actually sued Desi Lou over that because they thought they were using Al Capone's name for profit. Now, the court case was thrown out because Al Capone had passed. And since he had passed, there's no way to remunerate the fees there. So that's one of the things there. I'm fortunate. I mean, I get into a lot of the searches on my computer. Get into a lot of things. I mean, if law enforcement never saw that, they think, yeah, this guy's pretty demented. But probably 50 murders, which I looked at and I researched and talked about. So, you know, I actually did, I probably shouldn't talk about this, but I did get a threatening letter from one of the, I think it was the granddaughter of Tony Accardo.
Wow.
Because normally, of all the books I've seen, I don't think the Accardo family ever commented on anything. But we had some attempts to contact them. Stephen at once got a hold of Tony Cardo's daughter, Linda Lee, and he'd found her telephone number. And all he wanted to do was find out if that was really his dad. And he wasn't interested in money or anything. And she just started screaming at him. So he really got defensive. That's why I never used any last names in the book. But yeah, I got this letter a little while ago, but threatening about that. But, you know, this is a story of people that have passed, you know, so how can you dispute it? In my writing technique, really the only negative reviews I get is people that do not know what a nonfiction novel is. And a nonfiction novel is basically creative writing. Truman Capote started the genre in Cold Blood was his first analogy. And it's basically taking a time frame and characters and researching the speech patterns and putting in the logical dialogue. And I thought that would make my book more interesting. But some of the pure, you know, book readers, they don't like that. But besides that, of all the facts and everything else, I've had really good reviews on it. So.
Absolutely.
Did you frame the threatening letter?
I've got an email marked legal.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, put that up on the wall. That's a badge of honor. You got threatened by a granddaughter of the mob.
Yeah. And I talked to my lawyer about it. And it's my disclaimer on the first. I mean, it's huge. It's just absolutely. And I was very specific when I did talk about that, because we couldn't get a DNA test from Tony Accardo or his family. They won't even talk to us about anything. So, but there was a disclaimer. And you know, at the end of the book, I said, you know, Stephen, in all likelihood, was the illegitimate son of Tony Accardo. I had to put that kind of word it like that for legal reasons. But this Stephen looked exactly like Tony Accardo. They could be. There's one time that me and my dad and my cousin were sitting across from him, and we had the big tuna pitcher, and it was just eerie how, I mean, he was just absolutely a perfect replica of him. You know, he walked like him. He had the same temper. They had both dangled a man out of a third story window at one point.
Well, who hasn't done that?
They had both almost beat together a guy in a pool hall who was cheating. And just
that
a lot
sounds
of,
about right.
Yeah. So, he had that temper, but, you know, when I met him, he was very controlled, and he was very, knowing that Tony Accardo was his dad, when we kind of figured out the process together. And there's a couple of things that we couldn't figure out, that he was born in September and no one would ever go to Nova Scotia in December. So Tony Cardo used to go tuna fishing in Wedgeport, Nova Scotia, which was the tuna capital of the world. And every August they had a tournament. So he would go there. I think that's where they met. And we couldn't figure out until I found out that Tony Cardo went to the Havana conference, which was, if you remember in The Godfather, it was Lucky Luciano. When he came back from Italy, he requested all the mob bosses show up in Havana, and they brought him all the fees of all the rackets that he still owned. And also it was kind of a new, you know, they were getting into drug trafficking, et cetera. So I know that Tony Cardo had taken Stephen's mom to Havana, and that was the week before Christmas every year for about 10 years. And that was the timeline for when he was born in September. And that was okay. When Frank Sinatra took the famous silver suitcase of $2 million and took it over to Havana, and he was the entertainer.
Okay. Where did the pseudonym Joe Batters come from?
Well, Joe Batters was actually Tony Cardo, when he was a young mafia, he'd go on collections and he would take a baseball bat with him. And he was known for, if you didn't pay up, he would use a baseball bat. And then in the movie, The Untouchables, Al Capone, at one point, there's a formal dinner and there's about 20 people in the round table. Robert De Niro played Al Capone. And Al Capone gets up in the middle of it and he starts speeding to death two of his associates, which were trying to take over his operation. And he beat him with a baseball bat. Well, that was actually Tony Cardo in real life. And Al Capone, after he was done, he said, "This kid's a real Joe Batters." So I named the book Tony Cardo's Joe Batters because of that connection. And I mean, throughout his life, he was known as the tough guy that you would not want to mess with him. You know, if you were brought into court as a witness to something, you mummed up. I mean, it just, he was just a real, real tough guy. So I thought that was kind of an appropriate title. And I think it's kind of caught on too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've always loved studying the Italian mafia. I'm quite familiar with the St. Valentine's Day massacre. Probably more so than the average person, but definitely not as much as you have, mainly because I've just watched all the History Channel documentaries on that particular event. So, you know, Tony's name's been mentioned there a few times, so I do know that much. With your self-publishing reach, what are some tools that you're using to help keep track of how things are going, where you're making your sales, all those type of things?
Well, basically, we have spreadsheets and basically it's an IT barrage. Say we have marketing blasts, email blasts that go out constantly to our core people, et cetera. Those are always great deals with Amazon. Of course, they track your sales by the hour, actually. So you can go in and check, you know, whatever your sales are. And the rankings are, no one knows how they do the rankings. It's really fun. You probably heard people talk about that, and they do the same thing. You can both look up the Nook and the paperback, etc., and that's fairly easy to track. Same thing with Barnes and Noble, what they do. So it's fairly easy to track those sales, and those are the basic two. With I've been fortunate, I've sold 1/10 of my sales in England, in Great Britain. Nice. We've been selling to Germany and France and all around the world. And I think there's more of a interest in the UK, per se, with mobsters, et cetera. In fact, I'm working on a podcast to do in the UK, too. So, nice. And which is good since I speak the language.
Yes.
And I'm also, you mentioned audio, and I thought this would be unique. I know a Frank Sinatra impersonator in town, And he is actually doing my book, and he's from New York.
Oh, nice.
And this guy is fabulous. You know, he just has that Italian accent, and I think this is going to be one of the best audio books out there. I did the song My Way from Frank Sinatra. Mm-hmm. I called it the Joe Batters Blues. And he did that song, and it's just a hit. I mean, it just really does a great job. And it's just a fart on My Way, et cetera. So we've done some things like that, and that's going to be out probably another three weeks or a month. I hope that will be our next push. At some point, I'll probably put together a hardcover also, which includes an index. And I know that for historians, they like a hardcover. You know, ebooks are so much easier because you can find things on ebooks, but it's just more difficult. So That's a couple of projects we're kind of working on in the future, just working on sales. And it's just a constant barrage of finding new sources. And, you know, as an author, you're, you know, I don't know how many books I've sent out with a cover letter and for people, and some of them pay off. The New York Times Book Review, they say self-published authors never get published. Well, I sent them a book with a letter, and they said there's no way to track it, and I doubt if that's ever going to happen. But you know, there's a lot of things that you do, and if you could hook in with a New York Times Book Review or something like that, it'd be very good.
Yeah, absolutely, nice.
My biggest draw so far is, Rick Hogan's interview is, and he just goes on and on about my book, both the writing and all the detail in it. And it's crammed with on 50 people that every one of you know, all the mobsters, the starlets, and, you know, the movie actors, and, you know, except for Tony Accardo, everyone else in my book is known, which is one of the secrets is that, you know, you've got all these different angles.
Mm-hmm.
You get the Marilyn Monroe conspiracy theorists and JFK conspiracy theorists. You know, you can get on those websites. Also, I found some gangster forums to get on. That's another thing. You can find a forum in your genre to get on. I've got one called The Black Hand. I think so far I've had 1,000 views on it. There's one called Historium. There's one called Gangster B&B. A number of them. So if an author, research your genre. Find out if there's forums out there.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these you can get on. All you just have to sign up, and they have a place for new authors. And you put on. And that's where you can attract people that are looking for your genre, the book that you want to sell.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And pretty successful so far.
I like that.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I'll be doing that once. Fantastic. Once Magi is out and I have physical copies and e-copies I can utilize, I'll be doing some similar things, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, everything helps that you can think of. And Digitally now, I mean, a lot of the stuff is pretty inexpensive. You know, it's just a matter of time. And to get it out there, we also got on Pinterest. We've got a Pinterest campaign that, you know, we're up to 5,000 views on that. We just did different copies of actually today is Martin Luther King's was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was on a balcony of outside his hotel room in Memphis, Tennessee.
So I did a email splash today about the, I call it the most corrupt portion of the FBI and a really terrible section of American history of how J. Edgar Hoover just went after Martin Luther King. I talked about that in the book too, but so I did an email blast today and I was reading about it in my book, you know, talked about it. And those are the type of little things that I'm proud of the fact that I came up that I brought up the bigotry associated with Hoover. And, you know, he was mentioned in the book many times. I mean, I think he extorted every president 10 presidents when he was, I mean, he ran the FBI for 8, and he'd get all the information on everyone until he was in your back pocket. And then, you know, the secret is that he was a gay man, and the mob had pictures of him up in the Copacabana in New York. His birthday was New Year's Eve. So him and his assistant, Tolver, you know, they would go to these bashes, up these gay bashes, and the mob had pictures of him. So he never went after the mob. So it was a lot of years. The mob just had a free ring. So, yep. But some pretty interesting stuff there too. And I get into a lot of the parties, et cetera. And you know, a firsthand accounts of what happened. And, you know, J. Edgar Hoover, he lived with his mother till he's 40. And he left all his estate to his assistant, this guy Tolver. And Tolver was one of the guys that said of Robert Kennedy that, "I hope that one day someone shoots the son of a..." It was just a real sad era. And, you know, you think of what's been going on with the FBI recently. Well, that era was just even, you know, just more devastating.
And of course, I always like to point out the special literary connection of J. Edgar Hoover. He's the creator of the card catalog system at the Library of Congress.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yes, he was a library employee before he moved over to what we then called the Bureau of Investigation.
I see.
That eventually became the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
I see.
Yeah, he's buried just down the street in the Congressional Cemetery. In fact, you go there, it's the only grave that has a fence around it.
I wonder so, why.
Yeah, even in death, he's guarded.
You know, he ran the FBI for 50 years until he died, and he never hired one black in the whole time. He referred to blacks as the N-word in inter-office memos. He was very bigoted. You know, it was just but he had that control.
Yeah.
That was the McCarthy era, you know, back then, and just a very terrible time in American history. Yeah. But,
yep.
Going back to previous part of the discussion, I do have a question about finding connections or networking, basically, because you mentioned you were good friends with people at newspapers, or you knew a lot of people sort of in the media or at bookstores. Like, how did you go about sort of cultivating these relationships, or like seeking out this network of people, basically, to help you market your book?
Well, I would find people on the internet. I wanted to talk to Bill Romer since he wrote the book on Tony Accardo and found out he had died. Well, I found out that John Flood had written his eulogy, and I saw his email, and I emailed him back, and he emailed back 2 seconds later. So,
nice.
And you know, you think about it, 20 years ago, it would have taken me a year to track down a lead like that. So basically, I've used the internet to get started, to find a person that I'm interested in. And usually you can get the emails, and if they're pretty much interested, because, you know, they're all interested in this mob type of stuff. There's a guy in Chicago, he's a criminologist, Arthur Bylick, which I actually got to know and talked to a few times. And he had been the criminologist at Cook County for 40 years. And he was the one that put together 25 years of FBI tapes and mobster recordings and firsthand accounts. And he was the first one to come up with the actual 4 shooters of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which he announced. And so I used that as the basis of my book. Bill Romer had a different set of people that he thought was, you know, involved in it. The other thing I tried to do was find newspaper clippings. A lot of stuff discovered in the Chicago Tribune. And if you can find a newspaper clipping from the day after, that could be pretty more realistic than these rumors that get out there and gets distorted over time and et cetera, that you know, there's a lot of rumors that, you know, just aren't true. And they just start with, you know, basically fake news, you know, et cetera. So that's how I got to most of them. Then, of course, my contacts, they had other contacts they put me to. And so it just started the web things. John Binder is a guy I used quite a bit. He went on his mobster tour, which I've barely been to Chicago. I mean, all my days in Chicago have spent at O'Hare Airport waiting on flights. But did you go to Tony Cardo's house on the mobster tour? I think you...
I can't remember. I know we went... There was the one church where they had completely redone the front of the building because of the shooting there. There was a factory in Northside that we went towards. I can't remember where we went. It's been a few years.
Yeah, there was a mansion. That was Tony Cardo's mansion. And he probably runs people across there in River Forest. And there's a couple of them. Yeah, the church was where Jaime Weiss was killed by Tony Cardo.
Oh, right.
With a machine gun, and the machine gun, you can still see the bullet holes in the cornerstone of the church, you know, famous, and this is back in 1925, 1930, you know, et cetera. So a lot of that stuff.
So we talked about promotional stuff you've done as far as appearances on other podcasts and things. Have you been doing any in-person appearances like bookstores or book fairs or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm going to the Mob Museum in Las Vegas. I'll be there October 19th for a lecture and a book signing. If any of you have been there?
No, I haven't.
No, not yet. Nope.
And that's really, it's a fabulous, it's a four-story building that used to be the post office in Las Vegas. But it's a nonprofit they put together, and it's a fabulous experience. They actually have the actual wall from the St. Valentine's Day Massacre there. But I'll be doing a lecture and book signing there. That's one of them. They actually have a speakeasy also, which they're having the first anniversary another month. And they're just doing the whole thing right in Las Vegas. And there's, you know, you talk about Las Vegas. I mean, it's born for mobsters. Besides that, you know, bookstores have been very difficult to deal with. You know, they want to see all your reviews and et cetera, and your, you know, et cetera. So it's been difficult to get into any of those. Mm-hmm. I did get into a place called Centuries and Sleuths Bookstore, and it's in Chicago, and it's in downtown Chicago. So I have my book in River Forest in downtown Chicago, which is all mob territory. So that's the one place I got into. So those are always very difficult. I'm sure authors, you know, other authors had the same experiences, you know.
Yes.
So I've basically been trying to go to Chicago, Las Vegas, those areas. That's, you know, basically where people know the character.
Well, you got to come down to D.C. at some point, because we have the Museum of Crime and Punishment. That's actually right near the American Art Museum and Portrait Gallery. And it actually has a few mob things there as well. And
okay.
And I believe it even has the set from America's Most Wanted in the basement.
There you go.
My nephew just transferred there. He's a minister, and so he's in D.C., so maybe I'll get a chance to do that. So
yeah,
there you go.
All right, so you have the event in Las Vegas coming up in October. Anything else coming up in the next couple months? Any other podcasts, anything you want to talk about?
Not really. Just hopeful for different sort of venues, et cetera. Had pretty good result so far, and sales have been good. Just keep on going. So,
well, we actually discussed last month there was a change in policy at Barnes & Noble that if you sell 700 books through there online, they will carry your book in store. So that's something to aim for.
Well, I didn't know that. You know, my sales are 98% Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, if you look at their pricing policies, I mean, they've gone after Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. So if you buy my book in a Nook, it costs $3 more than a Kindle, but I make a dollar more with Amazon at a lesser price than the other books. Yeah. So they've done that thing, et cetera. And there's a lot of price wars out there. I mean, that's what they're about to do. It's going to that philosophy, et cetera, and going with Amazon, it's just the biggest one out there. You know, maybe I should buy 100 books from Barnes & Noble, 700 books, and get them in all the stores.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I wouldn't recommend that specifically, but yeah, hey, why not? There was the case of that about a year ago where somebody was ordering their books from various Barnes and Nobles just to get them on the shelves. And yeah, they would make a bunch of orders and then they would cancel them at the last minute once the books were actually shipped out. So I definitely wouldn't recommend that, but yeah, whatever helps get your book on the shelf, absolutely.
You know, the advantage of being in all the Barnes and Nobles is huge, of course. You know, I've looked into it. I'm just not that far along in the process yet to be considered for that. But hopefully we'll come to that, you know, in the next 6 months or a year, you know.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. So find your book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, an ebook for the Kindle and the Nook. And you can check out more at TonyAccardoIsJoeBatters.com.
Yeah, we have a pretty neat website, and all my interviews are on there. You listen to the Rick Togan interview. It's exceptional. Mm-hmm. And there's some interactive things on that. You can get to the different, I've been associated with the forums, et cetera. So that kind of works out. But it's been a real good ride, you know, going through this whole thing and doing the research and to see it finally come together. And I think for self-published authors, what I can say, if you decide to do it yourself, there's so much more control that you have in how you sell your book, and you can make a lot more profit too. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about going with a publisher, of course, I mean, you've got all different fees, but if you happen to hit it big like this and you get to keep basically 100% of your profits, it's really the way to go. And I would recommend that for people. Yeah. But the key is finding the right subject and having the hook.
Absolutely.
If you have a book that no one else knows about, or something in a genre which is selling, that is the most important thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, Neil. Well, thank you very much for appearing on the podcast with us today. And we'll share links in our show notes so others can be able to find your books.
Yes. Thank you.
Keith and Paul Rana, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I learned something new tonight, and I'm happy for that.
Okay. Hey, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. So this has been the April 2019 edition of the Publishing Podcast, Chapter 49, Self-Publishing Success with author Neil Gordon. Coming up, we'll be back, of course, for Literary Game Night on the first Friday of every month at Walls of Books. So the next one will be May. Otherwise, Paul, Rana, do you have anything else coming up in April?
Sadly, not for me. Okay.
Nope.
All right.
We're boring people this month.
Okay.
Lay it low.
All right. Well, remember to find us. Podcast is hosted on Podomatic, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Google Play, and our home on the web, audio.as21.com. You can reach out to us on Facebook, facebook.com/publishpodcast, on Twitter @publishpodcast, or email us publishpodcast@as21.com. Thank you again for joining us. From AS21 Media, I am Keith F. Shovlin.
I'm Rana Gaynor.
As always, this is Paul Dickinson Russell. Remember, where there are thoughts and ideas, there are stories. We'll see you next month.
Copyright 2018, AS21 Media, LLC. All rights reserved. AS21 Media. What do you want your story to be?